the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, the name Smurfit is synonymous with Irish business. The company started out as a small paper mill in Rathmines and has grown into a $21 billion multinational company. Last year, Smurfit Kappa merged with the US group WestRock, making it the largest packaging company in the world. We're joined now by Tony Smurfit, CEO of Smurfit WestRock. Tony, you're very welcome to the programme. Just to talk about that history of the business and that family heritage. It all started with that business in Rathmines. It was your grandfather, Jefferson Smurfit, who started it.
Yeah.
He was born in England, wasn't he?
He was born in Sunderland. It was him that really put the foundations into the business. I think in the 50s, my father came into the business and really grew it, 60s, 70s and 80s in the United States, England and Ireland. And was really a pioneer at the time. At the time, we became the first Irish multinational, which was important and I think, you know, demonstrated the fact that we had greater ambitions than just being in Ireland. And as we expanded, we went into the United States and then into Europe in the 90s. And then we did a whole set of deals in the 2000s and beyond.
What was your grandfather like? Do you remember him?
I do, actually. I used to see him every Sunday. He used to come in with dairy milk. Used to sit up at the bar, smoke a cigarette and drink his whiskey at 11 o'clock on Sunday. And that's how I really knew him. I mean, I was very young when he died. He died in 1977. So.
And how come he set up the business in Ireland? Were there Irish family connections or?
Yeah, what really happened was he was a tailor, a master tailor by profession and prior to the war. And then after the war, the McGee family of Belfast, who he was married to, one of them had one of the priests had a stake in a paper mill, which he didn't know what to do with. And so he came over and he said he'd help out because there was not a lot of people buying suits at that time. So in the end, he took that over and became an entrepreneur and built a paper machine himself and made boxes, mainly shoe boxes and things like that, which were, you know, in Ireland in those days, there were a lot of basic stuff being made.
And your father, Michael, he joined the family business. Your dad had wanted him to join the business straight out of school. And he set up the operation in Britain, which was going really, really well. And it was after that that things began to take off on an international scale.
Yeah, he left school at 16, got tuberculosis. And then in those days, having tuberculosis was 50-50, whether you're going to live or die. He read a lot of business magazines while he was in hospital, I think it was St. Pat's. During that period of time, through that education of reading these business magazines, the Financial Times, he decided to set up on his own. My grandfather then said, you know, he wasn't ready to continue on with the business and needed expertise. And so my father came back from the UK and built the business from there.
So for you then, what was it like growing up in that kind of a business family with all of that going on?
You know, Richard, it was quite interesting because, you know, we were a tiny company by today's comparison. But at the same time, in an Irish context, we were a huge company. We were doing deals on the stock market when the stock market in Ireland was not very sophisticated and going overseas. So my father was in the newspapers a lot because he was doing a lot of deals. And so when I was growing up, you know, our name was always in the papers. There was obviously a very significant security issue at the time. So we had bodyguards going to school and bodyguards outside of our house because of the security situation at the time. So, you know, even if we were tiny by today's standard, we were still well known, if you know.
And what were your own thoughts about what you wanted to do? Was there any pressure to join the Smurfit business? Were there other ideas that you had?
Well, I suppose growing up, I just wanted to get my leaving cert. And then I went off to the States to do college. And, you know, it was always sort of expected as the eldest of the family to go into the business. You know, I was breeding horses a little bit as well at the time. And I had been quite successful in that. So I was sort of between should I go into the business or breeding horses? And I decided that it was better to go into the business, which was a good decision.
Obviously, no regrets, because you're still involved with a stud farm and the horse industry. But were you tempted seriously to sort of stick with that?
Yeah, I mean, I was very lucky with my first horse. I mean, I did my first breeding horse was out of a mare called Tiffrance, which is Smurfit spelled backwards. Made a tremendous amount of money at the sales from a very small.
What did you make?
It was, about, I think, 1983, and I think I put 4,000 into it, and I got 180,000 for it, which in the early 80s was a tremendous amount of money.
You'd buy but several the horse, houses with that.
But the horse turned out to be a champion. I mean, he whoever bought him, you know, did very well. His horse called Pennine Walk, and so it was a. So of course, when you get that kind of success at a young age, you know, still in college, you're sort of saying, "Well, this is my future." But, you know, I'm glad I decided to stick with the knitting.
But your dad wasn't necessarily going to make it easy for you when you decided to join the company, because you ended up doing all kinds of different jobs. This wasn't necessarily going to be straightforward, was it?
Yeah, I never reported to Dad. I never worked directly for him. I mean, I suppose there were a number of people who influenced my career. My uncle Dermot was very influential. An English man called Pat Barrett was very influential. They were probably the two people that, you know, were sort of mentors to me in my business career. Dad was sort of always watching, but never interfering.
So what kind of jobs did you do when you started off in the company?
I did a graduate program, which, you know, I always tell people that I had to do night shift once. And one time I went into the boiler and at about 3 o'clock in the morning and took 30 seconds nap, or maybe it was a little bit longer. But actually that boiler, when we closed the paper mill here in Ireland, that boiler is now down in our Colonel Suarez plant in Argentina, which is in the, you know, right at the bottom of Argentina. And I was there about 3 years ago, so I gave the boiler a pat. Thanks. So I went into the graduate program, and then I ran a small plastic bag plant, which obviously today we are, you know, not in plastics to any great extent, and then went over to the States to be a personal assistant to a guy called Jim Malloy, who was our president of the American business at that time.
Was it a huge advantage, or was it a bit of a burden to have the Smurfit name while working in these various different parts of the business empire? Was there a lot of added pressure with it?
You know, I've always believed in getting up early and going to bed late. So yes, there's always, even today, people say I'm in my position because of my father, and they're right. I mean, you know, I got a break to get into the company, but then I had to work twice as hard as everyone else to make it, and to be seen by my peers and my people around me that work with me as being competent enough to run the business. And if I didn't have that respect, then I wouldn't want to do the business.
And the other part of it is that the company has been a couple of stints where it was taken private off the stock market, but for a lot of this period it has been a stock market company rather mm-hmm. than just a family firm.
Yeah, I mean, it's never been a family firm since 1963, I believe it is, when we went public. So it's been purely a publicly traded company, which, you know, our family has had a stake in, like we have stakes in many different shares of different companies. So it is not a family firm. But what I've tried to do, Richard, is to make sure that the company has a family feeling about it. And I think people who are in the company and who stay in the company, and most people do come in and stay, you know, who live by the values that I try and put in, which are loyalty, integrity and respect, and of course, safety at work. When I see what people like about the company, they love the familial atmosphere that's in the company. We are a very oral company. We talk very frequently. So we're always, you know, we're like a family company, which is huge for 100,000 people. That's pretty hard to do.
In all of those locations. I want to ask you about that. I mean, do you try and get around to a lot of the factories and a lot of the plants?
Yeah.
Realistically, it's probably not possible. 40 countries, 100,000 staff.
I can't get around everywhere, but what I do is what I've obviously now, since we've done the WestRock deal, I'm trying to bring a new, very large company into the culture of what was Smurfit Kappa. And the way I'm trying to do that is by continuing to post a lot about what I do when I visit facilities and bringing the people aspect of things to the fore, because it is, at the end of the day, anybody can buy a piece of equipment and anybody can run a piece of equipment. But the key for me, as I say to people, is that if you're, we want people to make that last sales call instead of going home, or to run the machine as fast as possible when we're not looking.
You mentioned there about plastics. It's not a big part of what you do. So much of what you do is around paper, cardboard based. One of the things about that was you would have seen a huge increase in sales through during COVID because of e-commerce and people buying things online, which required additional cardboard for delivery. And that's been a part of the business. Where do you get all, what about all the timber? Do you own forests?
We own very few amount of forests. We own forests in Colombia and a little bit in Brazil through our development with WestRock. But, you know, typically speaking, we contract for long periods of time with forest owners, whether it's in Sweden or whether it's in France or the United States. So we have plenty of contracted forestry.
And what about replanting?
Everything's replanted. Everything that we buy has got chain of custody and is under either PEFC, which is a form of control, or FSC. And in our own forestry, we have about 100,000 acres, of which 30,000 is given over to natural forest, and the other 70,000 we harvest and always replant.
So you have 100,000 acres. It's still a huge amount.
It's huge, but in the context of forestry for paper, it's not that big.
The WestRock deal, where you merged with the US company WestRock, how important was that? Because one of the things was that the Smurfit Kappa business was huge in Europe, a lot of interest in Latin America, but the United States was almost like a gap that the WestRock merger has filled.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, you'll recall that in 2018, we got approached by International Paper. And, you know, when they approached us and we were able to see off that approach, we felt that we needed to be bigger and stronger. And we've always felt that. And obviously, the place to be bigger and stronger where we had such a big gap was in the United States. And we continued to execute on our strategy and do very well. And prior to the Ukrainian conflict, which was initiated by Russia, we were doing very well on the stock market, and maybe WestRock's shares were not doing so well. So we had them in our sights, so to speak, for at least 5 years. And then when we were lucky enough to be able to conclude a deal, that was something that we wanted to do.
And it was a huge merger deal, which has made the company so much bigger as well. I want to ask you about tariffs and the Trump administration. How have you been affected by tariffs?
Well, thus far, not. Since the pause has been put on, our biggest effect is going to be with Mexico and Canada from a pure trade point of view.
Sell into the United States from Canada.
We do not, but our customers do, and both. And we do have some cross-border. So the numbers are not so big for us in relation to direct. The big problem with tariffs is the uncertainty of the tariffs that's out there right now. Our customers, you know, do not know what's happening. So today, with the 90-day pause, we don't have any particular issues. But clearly, with the uncertainty of what might happen, it is causing a lack of investment. It's a lack of people not knowing what to do. And that's creating a lot of consumer angst.
So you have clients, customers in all kinds of different industries.
Everywhere across the world.
Are you seeing a pause on their part?
We're certainly seeing that the consumer, Richard, it's the consumer in the United States is having a pause. You know, McDonald's is down 3% in same-store sales. You can see that people are not making decisions on investment because, you know, if you buy a piece of equipment that takes 6 months to arrive, you don't know if it's going to be $1 million or $2 million when it arrives.
Are you worried about how that will all play out?
Of course. I mean, I think that, you know, and I think at the end of the day, I am a great believer in the United States as an economy, as a business area to do business. And I think it will find the right equilibrium. So I am a believer, but I am a bit worried that, you know, we don't have certainty. And until we have certainty about what's happening, then we can plan.
Your father, Michael, Do you talk often? Is he a good man for advice these days?
We talk often. Dad's 88 now, in his 89th year. And, you know, I think he looks forward to my call and I look forward to speaking to him at 7 o'clock every morning, which is 8 o'clock his time. And then I will call him early afternoon and probably when he's at dinner. Just so I'll call him about 2 or 3 times a day, depending on the day.
So a lot of father-son conversations will go, well, son, how are things at work? But he's in a position to ask all the right questions because he knows the business inside out.
Well, you know.
But you can't tell him everything.
No, I can't. I cannot tell him anything that's price sensitive and do not tell him anything that's price sensitive. So he knows that. Dad is, as I say, he's as sharp as a tack. And continues to, you know, offer advice, and some of which I take.
What about the future? Your own family, your own children, would you envisage some of them going into the business?
Yeah, I'd love it. I don't want to say how old I am because it sounds. I always like to say I've stopped at 59. So
you're in denial, are you?
I'm in denial, exactly. My son has just started working as a sales representative in a specific business of ours. And, you know, I'd like to see him progress, but obviously it's up to him. And my daughters, one is doing Instagramming, another is taking a year out, and the other's just started college. So if they want to come in, I'd be delighted, but they have to. It's a long road for them.
And in terms of your own sort of interests outside the job, I mean, we talked a bit about getting around to see various factories and staff in a lot of places. You're still involved with horses. You have the four-knot stud.
Mm-hmm.
Can you allocate much time to that? Is that something you'd like
When I'm here in Ireland, I I like to be in four-knots, and I like to see my horses run. Unfortunately, they run pretty slowly. So typically speaking, the valleys are long and deep, and the peaks are very narrow and high in horse racing. But you know. Honestly, like, I love my business. I love the work that we do. I love the people that are in the Smurfit Westrock business. And, you know, to me, that's work is, I won't say a holiday, but it's a fantastic way to have my life.
Not something you would plan to give up anytime soon in terms of retirement. Your father is quoted as saying that he felt he retired too early, and his advice would be that you should keep working.
And I think it's right. Well, if you'll enjoy what you do, I mean, you know, I think, you know, I have a friend who says, you know, you get paid for the bad days. And thankfully, you know, I think we have an incredibly exciting future in Smurfit Westrock. We've got great investment plans. I'd love to be swimming with the tide rather than against the tide. But, you know, at the moment, you know, it's a difficult moment in the world. But, you know, our business is really well positioned and we've got great people. And so I look forward to a fantastic future for Smurfit Westrock.
Well, Tony Smurfit, CEO of Smurfit Westrock, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.